This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Hello, everyone. This is HPC Wire Soundbite for October 9th, 2009, available every Friday on iTunes. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and we have with us Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360. Good morning, Addison.
Morning, Michael.
This week's notable news involved IBM BlueJean getting an award from President Obama, as well as a new supercomputer joining the Petaflop Club. But first, we saw a new HPC vendor launch this week, a company called Bright Computing, debuted on Monday, basically an offshoot of ClusterVision's cluster management software business. Addison, did you catch the Bright Computing news this week?
I did catch this news. It's something I've been looking forward to. I met with Matthijs van Leeuwen at the ISC conference, and he hinted to me then that we should be watching for some developments in this space, and I was delighted to see the announcement.
Right. I spoke with Matthijs van Leeuwen, the ClusterVision co-founder, earlier this week and then again earlier today, and asked him about how the new company got its start. Let's take a listen. I'm speaking with Matthijs van Leeuwen, commercial director and co-founder of ClusterVision. Hello, Matthijs.
Hi, Michael.
Matthijs, what drove the decision to spin off ClusterVision's cluster management software into an independent business?
Well, Michael, Addison, first, thank you very much for having me on the show. Really what led us to launch Bright Cluster Manager product worldwide was customer feedback. Since we launched the latest version of the product at Supercomputing 2008 in Austin, Texas, the response we got was really encouraging. We had many people, in particular from the U.S., contacting ClusterVision and requested to buy or resell the software. So it quickly became clear that there was a need, a market, also in the U.S., for a better cluster management software. And what we did is we decided to create an independent reseller-based business model with a dedicated organization around Bright Cluster Manager. So Bright Computing now has its own management team, development, sales, and services teams. And finally, what I'd like to mention here is that Bright Cluster Manager is already a very well-established product in Europe. Under its previous name, as you mentioned, ClusterVision OS, it has been installed on hundreds of clusters across Europe, the Middle East, and Africa, both by ClusterVision and resellers, such as Dell in Europe, and also on several top 500 systems, actually.
So how do you think this rebranded product, Bright Cluster Manager, differentiates itself from the other cluster management software solutions that are already out there and being offered on a global basis, whether they be other commercial products or open source solutions like ROX or even custom OEM cluster management packages?
Well, first of all, Bright Cluster Manager was designed and written from grounds up, specifically for HPC cluster. What I recognize in competing products, that they do have an approach, they did what we also did in the past, which is you take a Linux distribution, you add many open source tools that each fulfill part of the required functionality, and then you do your best to make it work and look like an integrated solution. But that approach has its limitations. So for example, you can never offer a truly integrated and consistent user interface, because under the bonnet, you have all these different packages, for example, for monitoring, for alarm setting, for user management, node provisioning, image management, etc. All different packages under the bonnet. Another challenge is scalability. A lot of these packages were never designed to scale to thousands of nodes. We are convinced that as a result of the fundamental approach we took for Bright Cluster Manager, with, for example, a single daemon on each node in the cluster that provides all the cluster management functionality, that we offer a much more consistent and intuitive user interface, especially our graphical user interface, and that we combine that with many features, advanced features for very large and complex clusters, such as advanced redundancy features, multiple load balance provisioning nodes, etc.
Now, realizing that you're not directly affiliated with Bright Computing, you're still with ClusterVision, can you give us some idea of the near-term plans for the rebranded product and the new company?
Sure. So we will will be making several announcements in the weeks and months to come, including, for example, we will be announcing a number of installations that we've already done and are in the process of doing in the U.S. We will be announcing reseller agreements, and we will be announcing a number of very interesting and exciting partnerships with some very well-established HPC companies that have already recognized the value that Bright Cluster Manager can bring to their customers. And you will find all these announcements as they come out on our website, brightcomputing.com. And we will also have a booth at Supercomputing where people can meet the team and get a live demonstration of Bright Cluster Manager.
Excellent. Okay, we'll be definitely looking forward to that and following the news as it comes out. Thanks so much, Matthias, for joining our program this morning. We really appreciate the time, and good luck to everyone there and with the new company as well.
Thank you very much.
Madison, it looks like we have another cluster management software vendor out there. Do you think there's room in the market for another commercial offering in this area?
I do, Michael. I do think there's room for another commercial offering in this area because this is a still an enduring problem area for HPC users, particularly people who are HPC adopters who don't have as much Linux experience. There's still a disconnect between what it takes to administer an HPC system versus a general IT system that fits in some other part of the infrastructure. So I think that need is there, and I think it's been there. That's not to say that there aren't any challenges. There are challenges, as companies like Scali have found out before, in terms of getting their solutions noticed and marketing them in a value-added way without it just being a laundry list of features that you can come to market with. And furthermore, a big challenge is getting the user community to sit up and take notice that there are commercial cluster management options available on the free market that didn't come pre-bundled with their IBM, HP, Dell, whatever systems. And the tendency of a lot of users is to just go with whatever's already on there, or if they don't like that, to go try to download something else for free. That's a big hurdle for any independent commercial cluster management software company to get over.
Right, and their big message, and it's been the message, I think, of ClusterVision even before Bright Computing took this over, is that the software is easy to use. You don't need to be a Linux expert or an HPC expert to manage the software. It's something that lesser mortals can pick up. It's sort of hard to portray that over the magic of radio, but if you go to the website, you can see screenshots of the interface and sort of get a feel for the sort of the tight integration that they've done. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, how much they, how many resellers are able to kind of garner, and how many OEMs they're going to partner with to sort of get their software a nice position out there. But it'll be interesting to see in the upcoming months and weeks the announcements that they're able to partner with.
Yeah, and that's going to be an interesting feature set for them to bring to the HPC market. We've encountered plenty of users in our research. I've done site visits with many of them where the HPC users, the application users, the scientists, the engineers, have to do their own system administration, and it's not part of their skill set, really, other than they're forced to do it because the IT people that their companies have are Windows people who don't want to touch the Linux cluster. So having something with an intuitive interface that's easy to use, that ought to be a compelling value proposition. And Bright Computing's biggest challenge is going to be one of awareness.
Right. Well, shifting gears a little bit, one of the other notable announcements this week was about the Kraken supercomputer at the University of Tennessee. The Kraken machine is actually housed at Oak Ridge alongside a lot of other HPC systems. But that was upgraded recently, and it got up to a peak petaflop, probably not a Linpack petaflop, at a peak petaflop, and is now listed as the top academic supercomputer out there. Jaguar, the other Oak Ridge computer that is basically owned by the DOE, is also being upgraded, or maybe already has been upgraded, and that's going to hit 2 petaflops, I think 2.3 petaflops when all is said and done there. So there's a whole lot of petaflops going on at Oak Ridge right now. In fact, next year they're looking to add another petaflop system because of their climate research collaboration with NOAA. So Oak Ridge is going hot and heavy for these big systems. What do you think's the big thing about Oak Ridge and being able to garner all these top machines all of a sudden?
You know, I don't know how it is they're doing it necessarily, but clearly Oak Ridge is planting a flag that that they are one of the dominant supercomputing sites in the world right now. And clearly we've returned to an era in which the U.S. is dominating the supercomputing world. We haven't always been there. There was a long time when the Japanese Earth Simulator was the king of the hill. But with these Cray systems at Oak Ridge and also the IBM Blue Jeans, like the one like the Roadrunner system at Los Alamos, plus including the Sun systems at TAC, you know, there are really some dominant supercomputing sites that that are all clustering up in the U.S. now, and I think these systems at Oak Ridge are also a big validation for Cray and the strength that that company has managed to bring back in terms of reestablishing itself as a stable and enduring force in supercomputing.
Right, and we both saw at last week's NVIDIA GP Tech Conference. We're now talking about their system, upcoming system that's going to incorporate the new Fermi GPU acceleration in it. That's going to be a multi-petaflop system, probably tens of petaflops, probably coming in a couple of years or so. So it's nothing but more and more petaflops ahead for Oak Ridge. You got to believe some of this is related to the fact they've got sort of a big wire into the energy outlets from the Tennessee Valley Authority, and they've got a lot of energy to play with. But
well, that certainly couldn't hurt. I mean, the facilities issues around these large machines are only getting more and more complicated, especially with the multi-core power draw. And as you pointed out with GPU, it will be interesting to see if they can be efficient in terms of not just peak performance, but what kind of efficient application performance they're getting per square foot and per watt as they try to move into this new era of petaflop computing. The tendency in this industry is always to check that off and then go to the next power of 1,000. And everyone's already been talking about how we're going to get to exaflops. And I don't think this petaflop problem has necessarily been solved yet. But we do have another, the fourth system in the world that now has achieved a peak petaflop. And it'll be interesting to see how these all stack up. They're presumably all lining up their LINPACK runs now to have a go at the November top 500 list, which is coming right up.
Right. It'll be interesting to see how many true LINPACK petaflop systems we end up with on the new list. But even beyond that, I think we're going to end up with a lot more bigger systems. I think if you don't have, above half of a petaflop, it could be hard to make that top 10 anymore.
Well, and that even then you're saying true LINPACK petaflops, and sometimes true LINPACK is an oxymoron in itself. Not all applications mirror LINPACK in terms of their performance profiles, and we all know that. But it is a very big number and one that's noteworthy, and we're not at the point yet where a petaflop system isn't interesting or ho-hum, like we got to with no one cares about a teraflop anymore. And I still think that's a lot. So, that's an interesting dynamic. The other thing this gets me thinking about, Michael, just in the course of the other work that we've been doing at Intersect 360 over the last couple of weeks, is we've been going through our newest site census data, which is a installed base analysis of what's currently on people's floors and how they have it installed, how they have it configured. And it's interesting because we look at what's the newest, brand new, farthest reaching thing, but then also compare it to what's an average thing that's installed in someone's room, and the massive disconnect that you get between those two things. What we found is, for example, 43% of the installed base is still single core. So, that's the kind of statistic that we're putting out there that reminds you to be mindful not only of what's new and what's coming, but what the installed base looks like today in terms of solving existing problems, which is, things like where Bright Computing is right now and managing existing clusters that aren't necessarily the world's largest supercomputers.
Right. Well, the upgrades we were just talking about for Kraken and Jaguar, those are the 6-core Istanbul processors. So they're going to have to figure out how to utilize all 6 cores there. But, yeah, point taken about, how to utilize all the parallelism that's being built into these systems now, and it's not all being done efficiently. And I think that's goes back to sort of the GPU story and how that can be somewhat of an easier way to get to parallelism in a certain sense than these multi-core systems. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out over the next year or two.
I'm laughing at you, Michael. I know you're all over the GPUs. It's going to be a while before we're all converted over to GPUs.
Oh, it is. I was almost thinking, I'd go out on a limb and say, within X years, we'll have X percentage of the top 500 or let's say the top 10 represented by GPU computing. But really, that would just be a wild guess. We really don't know how much. It's too early to say. But I got to say, I wouldn't be surprised if in a matter of a few years, that we'd see a good portion of those top 10 systems maybe be powered by GPU performance.
Well, the top 10 systems analysis is interesting, Michael, but I'm kind of in the mindset of where the market at large is right now this week. And it's going to be a while before the market is really adopting any accelerator, GPU, FPGA, in big volume. And FPGA has actually got a more dominant presence than GPU right now because they're embedded into certain architectures like you see. We've gone through this before, but with Convey and BlueArc,
right,
and other sorts of architectures, whether they're compute or storage, that are implementing FPGA. So Extreme Data is another. You don't want to forget about other types of accelerators either.
Yeah, you can't discount that, especially FPGAs. That's sort of a different architecture than just a pure acceleration play. That's I think that has a different story than a GPU or a floating point accelerator or something along those
or
lines.
Stealth.
Yeah.
But we've been speaking about these top 10 systems, and of course the BlueGene comes into the discussion there, and BlueGene also had a big week this week, right?
Right. We saw our own very own President Barack Obama presenting a National Matter of Technology and Innovation Award to IBM's BlueGene series of supercomputers.
That's Nobel Peace Prize winning President Barack Obama.
He's got his own award to go by.
There's awards flying all over the place. I didn't get my award yet, Michael.
Yeah, well, they're coming. They're coming. We've got our own awards coming up, so you never know. But yeah, I thought that was interesting to give an award to basically a supercomputing architecture. I mean, we do that. We're HPC Wire. We give out our Reader's Choice and Editor's Choice awards. But it was interesting to see the President of the United States give out such an award. Now, these National Medal of Technology Innovation awards have been given out for a while, usually to people, and a number were given out to different people this time around. But to give a supercomputer an award, I thought it was a little bit odd in a way, because it's just sort of one architecture and one aspect of our supercomputing ecosystem there. But of course, this was done because this is the architecture that basically is going into our NNSA infrastructure to keep the nuclear weapons programs safe and part of the maintenance programs there. But I still thought it was a little bit odd. I mean, what was your take on this?
Well, there's a couple different ways to look at it. First of all, I think it's great that the current administration is recognizing supercomputing and its role in innovation with the National Medal of Technology and Innovation Award. And it's kind of a general award for IBM and BlueGene in general, because who would you really give it to specifically for BlueGene? It is interesting. Cray probably hates it because, Cray's saying, well, what about us? We've got systems at scale too. But nevertheless, it's a wonderful recognition of a very scalable supercomputing architecture that a lot of government agencies and also other organizations have seen some real benefit out of, and a wonderful recognition of supercomputing technology. You're right that most of these awards do go to individuals when they can pick out who those individuals ought to be, and more rare that it would go to just a company in general or in particular a specific product. But I do like the sense of symbolism there. I did leaf through a little bit of the history of this award and found that IBM has been kind of a go-to company. They've been recognized for different technologies at several different times, from everything from disk drive technology to barcode scanners. So, IBM has been a regular recipient of the award ever since it started in 1985, and you had people like Jobs and Wozniak getting the award for Apple supercomputers. In fact, a few IBMers got the award back in 85 then also for the IBM System 360. So a little bit of a parallel there that you had one IBM product there and one IBM product here. But to your point, rare that a supercomputer would get the award, and I think this is the biggest year for supercomputing in the history of the National Medal of Technology Awards, with the possible exception of 91, when we had two different supercomputing-related winners. First of all, Gordon Bell, who obviously is still widely recognized throughout the supercomputing industry, as well as another IBM one where John Koch at IBM got the award that year for his development and implementation of RISC, the RISC architecture. So, but that's going back quite a ways, and certainly nice to see the focus on supercomputing now.
Yeah, it is. Now, I do sort of get the impression, though, IBM sort of has the ear of this administration. I know... the periphery of my vision covering this, I know that IBM has been sort of involved with the administration about the electric power grid infrastructure, and they've been active in that. And I have a feeling they do have a connection to the administration. They've been talking to them a lot, so maybe that kind of helped the company here. Strange in a week where the Blue Jean got an award, the Department of Justice is actually going to be investigating IBM for possible
antitrust.
Right, antitrust for the mainframe business. I think there were some complaints there, so the Department of Justice is going to go in and take a look. And unfortunately, that came in the exact same week where they got the Blue Jean Award. But the Department of Justice is independent of the president, so I guess that's okay. It's just sort of interesting timing there.
Yeah, I don't really know about the DOJ investigation with IBM. We've talked about antitrust for concerns with other countries. We've talked about the DOJ with respect to other companies in our industry recently, and I don't know the first thing about it. You're right, it's bad timing for IBM here. I'm going to rather spend the time celebrating their win with the Blue Jean. I think that's a nice news story and good news for supercomputing in general. You make the point about them having some sway with the administration. They're a huge employer. They got a lot of people with jobs, and they got a lot of technology in various different areas, to the point of their history with this award, and I think that's part of what gives them the gravity to have that kind of sway versus Cray, which also has these great supercomputers but is a much smaller company.
Right. Well, I guess we can sort of even that out. I mean, we've got our HPC Wire's got the Editors and Reader's Choice Awards coming up, so we can sort of spread the love around, and we've got to start thinking about that, because we're going to be giving out those awards in a few weeks at Supercomputing.
I'll leave that to you guys on the publication side. You take care of the awards, I'll take care of the market shares.
Yeah, so it sort of reminds me that we need to get going on our awards too, but it's nice to see the president giving us some direction there. Well, I think that probably wraps it up for this show. We've got a lot of news coming up. Of course, CO9's coming up. There's going to be a lot of news running up to that, and looking forward to the weeks ahead. It's going to be a busy time.
It's definitely going to be busy. I've got a busy couple of weeks ahead, but I'm looking forward to it. It's my favorite time of year.
Very good. Well, we'll talk to you next week, Addison.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
All right.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.